This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiz Wahib in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight...
United Nations and international agencies are racing to aid tens of thousands of survivors of Monday's catastrophic flooding and mudslide in Sierra Leone's capital. Experts warn the city is vulnerable to cholera and other diseases.
That's Lisa Schlein reporting from Geneva. Details next. Also, grenade attacks in Burundi's capital kill one person and wound nearly 30 others. And gender-based violence is on the rise for South Sudanese refugees seeking shelter in Uganda. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, United Nations and international agencies are racing to aid tens of thousands of survivors of Monday's catastrophic flooding and mudslide in Sierra Leone's capital. Experts warn the city is vulnerable to cholera and other diseases. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The International Red Cross Federation says torrential rains in Sierra Leone triggered deadly mudslides, wiping out whole communities, leaving thousands homeless. IFRC Secretary General Elhaj Assi says more than 400 people have been killed and more than 600 are missing. He tells VOA the death toll is expected to rise. He says it is unlikely anyone will be found alive after 3 or 4 days. Nevertheless, the search for survivors will go on.
Somehow, there is hope that some people are missing because maybe they were not around exactly in the place, you know, where it happens, and their families are still looking for them, and we'll be lucky to find them. Some may be stranded in remote areas that are not accessible right away, that we may find, you know, alive.
The Red Cross is launching an emergency appeal for more than $4.5 million to help 4,600 people over the next 10 months. Greatest needs are for shelter, safe water, food, and sanitation to prevent diseases from spreading. A World Health Organization spokesman, Christian Lindemeyer, warns people affected by the mudslides and flooding are vulnerable to outbreaks of cholera and other waterborne diseases.
Flooding has damaged or can damage or cause overflow to sanitation facilities, increasing the risk of waterborne diseases. Flooding creates breeding grounds for mosquitoes and can cause, or most likely does cause, an increase in malaria and other vector-borne diseases.
Lindemeyer says the WHO is providing psychosocial care for traumatized survivors, as well as safe burials and trauma and medical care. The UN is sending a team of 7 experts to assess the damage and coordinate relief. The UN Children's Fund is providing emergency sanitation work, and the World Food Program is distributing food to thousands of survivors. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Meanwhile, more than 40 people are reported dead after a landslide swept over a fishing village in northeastern DRC. Hundreds are reported still missing. The village of Tora is located on the shore of Lake Albert in Uturi province. Wednesday's landslide followed heavy rains, causing part of a nearby mountain to wash away. Reuters reports mudslides and landslides have killed over 4,000 people in Africa over the past 10 years and caused millions of dollars in damage. Experts say deforestation is one of the main reasons for the natural disasters. Analysts say there were some unexpected poll results in Kenya this year, including the ruling party's success in gubernatorial and parliamentary races and an increase in women and youth being elected at local levels. They also question whether the $483 million that Kenyan taxpayers spent on a digital election was worth it. From Nairobi, VOA's Jill Craig has more.
Nairobi roads have returned to their usual pre-election bustle, and Kenyans have gone back to work. But the elections are not quite over, as opposition leader Raila Odinga insists the presidential poll was stolen and has announced plans to challenge the outcome at the Supreme Court. Official results show President Uhuru Kenyatta defeated Odinga 54% to 45%. University of Warwick Professor of Comparative Politics Gabrielle Lynch says most people expected a tighter presidential race, although she notes the final result is still in dispute. Lynch also notes the ruling Jubilee Party succeeded in gaining parliamentary seats and winning 28 of 47 governorships. She says a projected wave of independent winners failed to materialize.
Due to alleged problems with party nominations, both in the opposition and in Jubilee, in a number of constituencies and counties across the country, independent candidates stood against party candidates, and there was a prediction that quite a few of these people might win. Actually, very few independents won in the end.
Kenya's Treasury says the government allocated $483 million for the election, with $415 million directed to the Electoral Commission, known as the IEBC. Kenyan researcher Nanjala Nyabola says despite these large sums, there still were problems with the voter registry, the transmission of vote counts, and a delay in the release of polling station tally forms.
We were promised a digital election. We didn't have a digital election. The only thing that was digital was the voter registration. Everything else was 100% manual. So it makes you wonder, what did we spend all this money on?
1 week before the election, the Electoral Commission's head of IT systems, Chris Masondo, was found tortured and murdered. Schaefer Okore, a program officer at political engagement organization Siasa Place, says the lack of follow-up is concerning.
Investigations, I don't think they're being done, or if they are, I don't know who's doing it. Nobody wants to answer why this man was killed or murdered. And allegations have come across that he held such a senior position in regards to the process that was being supposed to be conducted. And we don't have answers. Why was he killed?
In addition, police killed at least 28 people in post-election violence, including a young girl and a baby, according to Kenya's National Commission on Human Rights. Kenya's Independent Police Oversight Authority says they are investigating these cases. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Grenade attacks in Burundi's capital last night killed one person and wounded nearly 30 others. The Associated Press quotes a police spokesman as saying the attacks took place at two bars in the Buyenzi neighborhood of Bujumbura. It's not clear who's responsible for the attack or the motive. Hundreds of people have died in political violence in Burundi since April 2015. That's when President Pierre Nkurunziza announced he would seek a third term in office. As South Sudanese refugees continue seeking shelter in Uganda, cases of gender-based violence are also reported on the rise, especially in new settlements in Ajumina district. The violence includes physical assaults, emotional violence, rape, and defilement, and mostly carried out by intimate partners and close relatives. VOA's Catherine Nambi files this report from Kampala.
Although they escaped violence in their home country, violence has followed some South Sudanese women and children in Uganda's refugee settlements. This, however, is not gun violence, but gender-based violence, GBV. Joa Susan is a South Sudan refugee in Mungula 1 refugee settlement in Ajumani district.
Here in our camp particularly, you'll get the women and men just fighting at home, or neglecting even children, at times even raping happening in our camp. But if such things has happened immediately like that, we do referral pathway.
Charles Ataku is an assistant settlement commandant at Mungula 1 and 2 refugee settlements. He says among the crimes handled in the settlements are related to gender-based violence, or GBV.
Rape is there, once for a while defilement, and even physical fighting between men and their wives, even parents beating children. Those things are all there. But we are trying our level best because we have a police post around, cases which are criminal in nature. We always reported them to police.
Health centers in the settlements have been equipped to handle GBV cases. Apenyo Kennedy is a medical clinical officer at a health center in Paglinya refugee settlement in Adjumani district.
Majorly, per month, I can get like 3-2. Some months I don't get. They can come direct from the community. Sometimes they are brought by policemen. Normally, we have the rape cases, defilement cases. Those are the two that are leading.
To curb the violence, refugee agencies UNFPA and ACCORD have trained community health officers to sensitize the refugees on the dangers of GBV. Okot Anthony is one of the community health officers in Paglinya refugee settlement.
Once we organize for sensitization, 5 or 6 women will come up with what has been happening to them, bringing all the issues to us. During the time we came here, no one knows that there's GBV, there's whatever. We don't know. Even me, myself, I don't know. But after being exposed to it, then I came to realize that all that we are doing, we are at least against women's rights. Then we have started to reform. Then we have started giving out the knowledge that we acquired from the training to our community, entire communities.
Okot explains some of the causes of the violence against women.
One, most men, yeah, so idle. They have nothing to do. They don't like their wives to ask for money from them. Two, once ratio went off, a woman asks for ratio for food to the children, and then husband will grow annoyed, will immediately start beating the wife because you may start saying that, I'm so idle, why again are you asking for this from me? Then three, women came here first, so many men were behind. After when they came here, they found that their wives have settled. So they again want to take the control of that place that their wives are now settling in by force.
Officials say with 85% of South Sudanese arriving in Uganda being women and children, addressing cases of gender-based violence needs to be made a priority. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
You are listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Seventeen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. United Nations and international agencies are racing to aid tens of thousands of survivors of Monday's catastrophic flooding and mudslide in Sierra Leone's capital. Grenade attacks in Burundi's capital last night killed one person and wounded nearly 30 others. And gender-based violence on the rise in South Sudan's refugee camps that is sheltered in Uganda. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Amnesty International is urging South Africa to take the lead in protecting human rights and good governance in South Africa. Regional leaders are meeting this weekend for the 37th Heads of State Summit in Pretoria. The meeting will focus on trade and industrialization, but not human rights. South Africa assumes the leadership of the Southern Africa Development Community this year. Lloyd Kuveya is a researcher for Amnesty International covering Zimbabwe, Zambia, Namibia, and Malawi. He told VOA's William Eagle that in recent years, human rights has been trending downward in Zambia and other parts of Southern Africa.
You look at Zambia, for instance, as an example. We said made a lot of progress in its democratization agenda and also in particular protection and promotion of human rights. Now, from 2016, when they had the elections, and with President Edgar Lungu taking over, we then began to see a downward trend towards human rights protections, where the rights of freedom of expression, association, and assembly are now being violated, especially in respect of opposition political party activists and also independent media. One of the most independent newspapers in Zambia was actually closed down, The Post, because of its criticism of the government. And then when Hakainde Hichilema started offering strong opposition in Zambia, we also witnessed the clampdown. He was arrested on so many different charges using the Public Order Act. and most recently the treason charges, which were dropped. And so that's one. We also see in Lesotho, for instance, which had also made strides in terms of human rights protection, but we're now seeing a political and security crisis in Lesotho where human rights violations started again occurring because of contestation of power within Lesotho itself.
How much influence does South Africa have in terms of encouraging human rights in the region? Because, for example, there's always been issues of human rights in neighboring Zimbabwe and even large refugee flows.
South Africa, it has disappointed us. South Africa is taking over as chair of SADC at this summit. They must begin to do what some of the things that Nigeria, for instance, has done in West Africa. We've seen most recently the role that Nigeria and Senegal played to ensure that the election was not stolen by the president in the Gambia, for instance. This is the role we want to see South Africa playing to ensure that the upcoming elections in Zimbabwe are going to be free, fair, and democratic, and also in accordance with the SADC principles and guidelines on democratic elections, that people's right to vote is respected. People are free to express themselves, to choose the leader that they want.
Are there mechanisms within SADC to monitor or to investigate violations, and is that something that you would call for?
We would call for mechanisms to do that, to investigate violations. But we used to have a sub-regional court, the SADC tribunal. The heads of state, they closed that tribunal, that regional sub-regional court. You know, when you compare with East Africa, it's got its own regional courts. West Africa, it's got its own regional courts that are operating well. And you saw when things started happening in Burundi, those violations, people were able to go to the East African court to seek direction. In Southern Africa, we do not have such a body. And it's up to civil society organizations to go and investigate violations that are taking place in the different SADC states, and then report to the different intergovernmental bodies that can do that. So to answer you, there is no mechanism within the SADC Secretariat that can actually do any investigations or violations of human rights.
Is human rights on the agenda at all during this weekend's SADC meeting?
The main focus, unfortunately, and I'm sorry to say, is mainly on in trade, industrialization, and human rights is not on the agenda at all. And this is why civil society organizations are actually gathering and meeting currently to talk about the neglect by our leaders to talk about human rights. They are saying that our focus is on economic development, infrastructure building, and all those things, and industrialization. But we are saying as civil society, yes, we want development, we want economic development. But at the same time, we also want human rights protection.
That's Lloyd Kuveya, a researcher for Amnesty International. He was speaking with reporter William Eagle. This week, Algerian President Abdelaziz Bouteflika replaced Prime Minister Abdelmadjid Tebboune less than 3 months after appointing him. The president appointed Ahmed Ouyaya, his chief of staff, in his place. Anwar Haddam, president of the Algerian Movement for Liberty and Social Justice, says Algeria needs political reform. Haddam spoke to VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawi about the new prime minister.
Algerians, they have very bad experience with Mr. Ouyahia. This is the fourth time that he is being appointed as a prime minister, and the third time during Bouteflika's era. They had really very bad experience with him whenever there are some difficulties, and when the government would like to push for some restrictions, they will call for Mr. Ouyahia. As for the political life, he is known to be one of the remaining of what we call the eradicator, those who have been calling for the old security instead of calling for reconciliation. He is known to be not in favor of any dialogue with the opposition. We are expecting difficulties ahead in Algeria.
But Bouteflika's National Liberation Front, FLN, and the Rally for National Democracy, RND, headed by Ouyahia, together enjoy an absolute majority in the parliament.
The last election of the parliamentary election, only about 10% of the population that participated in the election. Secondly, we have Uyahya that comes from the Israeli for National Democracy, and Bouteflika is supposed to be with the front of the national liberation, which is supposed to have the majority seat in the parliament. So they are not from the same party, and Uyahya is not from the majority party. But still, as I said, if we are in a normal situation, he would not have been appointed. The constitution of the state states that the prime minister will be chosen from the majority party. Even that, he is not from the majority party. And also, he will be appointed based on a political program. We don't know what is the program of the government. We have never known in Algeria any program of the government. They have been talking for 18 years now, the program of the president, Bouteflika, but we never saw it. The Algerian people have never seen the program of President Bouteflika that everybody is talking about. Mr. Tebboune, the former prime minister that has been there for 3 months only, has also said that he is here to implement the program of Mr. Bouteflika. Uyahya comes yesterday and saying that he was appointed based on the program of Mr. Bouteflika. So we don't understand what is the program of Bouteflika.
Algerian population is now 40 million people, with half of the population under the age of 30, and unemployment is about 33%. Would replacing a prime minister improve the economic situation? And what exactly is needed to escape a sudden uprising in Algeria?
There will be no economical development without a political change in Algeria. This is well known. Algeria is a rich country, and yet we are having all these figures. So we think that it will be the same as usual. There is no clear future for Algeria, and actually it's getting more and more unstable. It looks like the era of Mr. Mubarak's few months before his departure. And that really is troubling, not only for Algeria, but for the entire region. Algeria is becoming a real factor of instability in North Africa. The situation will be that to have real political change, we need transition period where all political tendencies will be sitting together along with the military and figured out the way out.
That was Anwar Haddam, president of the Algerian Movement for Liberty and Social Justice. He spoke to VOA's Mohamed El Shenawy. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and our engineer, Vasco Volarech, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Footballers must have dedication and teamwork. And to end malaria, we need this same unity. Join with leaders like President Sirleaf.
Malaria stops footballers from scoring and students from learning.
And join with footballer Didier Drogba.
Malaria is preventable and treatable.
United, we can beat malaria.
This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. 55 minutes of nonstop, pure, 100% African music. That's what you get when you tune in to me and my crew. This week, meet South Africa's BCUC and catch some of the band's live performance from Festival des Tours du Monde. Go deep into northern Cameroon and discover traditional sounds with Ali Kaka. Don't be slackers. Soak it in. The sounds of gorgeous tunes from all over Africa. This Sunday and the following Saturday at 1500 UTC.